Ready? Okay, we'll call the meeting to order at 2 p.m. Yasmeen, roll call, please.
Somerhalder?
Here.
Caputo?
Here.
Cross?
Here.
Dodell?
Here.
Domingo? He's absent. Ukami?
She's supposed to be in person, so she may be on her way.
Okay. Harris? I believe he's absent. Palamchi?
Here.
Kappas? Here. Levine? I don't see her online.
If you're coming in virtually, let's go ahead and make sure if you're not speaking to go ahead and mute so we don't get that background noise.
Are we still doing roll call?
No, we're.
I think you missed Mindy Motihari.
I'm here, but I was.
Thank you, Dr. Motihari.
Sure.
Is that everybody on the list? There should be 11. So I have Caputo, Calamchi, Motihari, Dodell, Kappas, Somerhalder present, and Cross, excuse me. And then I have Kami, Harris, and Domingo absent. And somebody else joined. Sorry, just for roll call, the person that just joined with the area code 310, is that a committee member? And if so, can you identify? And if you're muted, hit star 6 to unmute.
Hi, this is Dr. Rebecca Levine.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was a long roll call. But I think you have a quorum.
Okay, great. First of all, welcome to our meeting, March 8th, of the Investigative Committee. I'll go ahead and introduce myself. I'm Dr. Lou Somerhalder. We'll go around the room to the left. Everybody kind of introduce yourself.
Hello, I'm Deb Kappas. I'm a dental hygienist.
Ryan Edmondson, board staff.
Dr. Julie Cutler, Deputy Chief Investigator.
Dr. Ben Berschler, one of the investigators.
Staff.
Terry Balastowski, compliance consultant.
Mary Ford, I'm a compliance officer.
April Romero, compliance officer.
Selena Cunha, board staff.
Yasmeen Bustamante, executive assistant.
Okay. And our doctor's coming to us virtually.
Anthony Caputo.
Tim Cross.
Mindy Motihari.
Sabah Kalamchi.
John Duffkin.
Dave Dodell.
All right, at this time, item three, review and discussion of possible actions of committee meeting. Our minutes from January 18th. Are there any additions, deletions, corrections?
None that I'm aware of. I don't know if any committee members had any amendments that they would like to make to the minutes.
So move.
If not, you can take a
minute. If not, approved.
Dr. Caputo, was that you that made the motion?
It was Dr. Calamci.
Dr. Calamci?
Okay.
But I'll second it.
Okay. Now you can vote.
You want to introduce?
You can take a vote. Oh, so we have a second by Dr. Calamci, a motion by Dr. Calamci, a second by Dr. Caputo. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? None opposed. The minutes pass. The scope of, if you don't mind, Dr. Somerhalder, scope of work was really on here just so that you guys know that it's been established by the board that started this committee. It won't come on this agenda again, but it's just really to say and to answer any questions. And if nobody has any questions on agenda item four, we'll pause for a second, but we'll probably move right into Scott and Mary doing a presentation. So it doesn't sound like it, so you can move on to agenda item five.
Yep.
So again, this is Ryan Edmondson, board staff. Mary, Scott, myself, and Dr. Dovgan, with a lot of work, put together a bunch of stuff to try to help the committee understand the relationship that the committee has with the board, staff, investigators, consultants, and also we wanted to give you an idea of some other things regarding open meeting law and what you can and can't do, what you should be doing as opposed to what you shouldn't be doing, those types of things. And then when we move on to item six, we'll get an opportunity to do kind of put into action what we went over in item five. So with that, if you don't mind, I'll introduce Mary and Scott. Mary and Scott both come from the Attorney General's office. Mary used to be the lead counsel for this board for, 25 years. She left about a year ago. She took on a new role. She's section chief. Is that the correct title? Section chief of the licensing and enforcement section, which is also where Scott hails from the licensing enforcement section. And he, like most attorneys, they do tons of legal advice for multiple boards. The dental board is just happens to be one of Scott's boards that he gets to provide legal advice. So they put together some information. For those that are attending here, there's a PowerPoint. Is it in PDF format? Yeah. On one of your tabs on your computer, not the packet. For those that are attending virtually, Yasmin's going to share her screen here shortly, or somebody from staff, correct, Yasmin?
Yeah, I can do it.
Okay. And this will be a PowerPoint presentation that Mary and Scott put together regarding open meeting law.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Mary Williams, and some of you I've met before, some of you I haven't. So the PowerPoint that Scott and I provided is based on a PowerPoint that our section has given board training on for many, many years. So we will update it as needed and adapt it to whatever audience we're giving the training to. So basically it's, as the title suggests, practical tips for new and veteran. I put committee members on this one. Generally, we do it in front of boards. It's just some basic tips on how to conduct more effective committee meetings. So a lot of it, as I said, might be pretty basic. I know some of you may have sat on boards and committees before, so you may already know all of this, and some of you may be new to this. So we'll go through them pretty quickly. This presentation can sometimes take a couple hours, but I think we'll shortcut it just because you guys are short on time. And then you have it to take with you to refer to, and you can always feel free to reach out to Scott and I You can get our numbers through Ryan, but if you have specific questions after today.
And before you get started, Mary, I'm actually having trouble presenting it to the committee members.
Do you want me to see if I can?
Yeah. It's not taking it.
Is it saved in the March folder?
Yes.
Yes. I don't see the new one.
It should be a PDF.
Oh, it's right here.
It's a 7 folder in March.
Got it. It's up.
It's up?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So we're ready to go. I'm going to go to slide 3. And these are just some basic tips for the chair of the committee, so Dr. Somerhalder. The role of the chair is to maintain order. The chair does not do all the talking. That's what we have multiple committee members for. Chair encourages participation and clarifies and rephrases things like motions and discussions as you go through the meeting. Next. Chair also assists the committee in staying on tasks, redirects members or speakers when necessary, and assists in creating a clear and adequate record of the meeting. As you all know, these meetings are recorded. You record the committee meetings, right? Ryan?
Yeah, yes. Okay. And we're required by...
I don't think you have to post them.
Oh, we're not?
Committee, but we'll look at that later. Anyway, they are clear. And one thing we do request, because a lot of you are virtual, if you are going to make a motion or a second motion, you should identify yourself so that the record is clear. And that would go for even people in person, so people that are appearing remotely know who's making motions and seconding them.
May I say something to that? It might even be helpful. This is Ryan again. I'm getting ready to say exactly what I just did. especially if you're virtual, but even if those that aren't, because we're kind of in this hybrid format, to identify yourself by your last name, just say Kappas, Kami, Somerhalder, whoever, and then state whatever the comment is. But it's especially important when you do the motion.
That way the minutes can accurately reflect who made the motions, who seconded. Okay, I'm on slide 5.
Okay.
Starting the meeting. So just kind of as a basic starting point, this committee is considered a public body, and every public body of the state is governed by the Arizona Open Meeting Law. So that's why, you know, you have to have a quorum, you have an agenda, you cannot stray from that agenda. So there's a whole set of statutes that will govern the committee as a public body, and you don't want to violate those statutes because that can open you up to what we call an open meeting law complaint, which will then get investigated to determine if there's been any violation. So Scott and I are your open meeting law cops to keep you on track, just as we do with all of our client boards and agencies. All right, so slide 5 is just, again, very basic. Your agenda is going to identify a starting time on your meeting. The meeting cannot start before that. And what's important about that is if you have a few of you in the room or a few of you on virtually, you can't start talking about anything even informally that is on the agenda. You can talk about Broncos, and you can talk about the Cardinals, and you can talk about the weather, but you can't start any discussions about anything that's on your agenda. Next, when you have the quorum present and it's 2 o'clock or 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, then the chair can call the meeting to order, which Dr. Somerhalter did appropriately today. Next, if you're not able to attend a meeting and you know that in advance and it's not an emergency the day of, it's preferable if you can notify staff in advance, because in the event staff, if you run up to where you're not going to have a quorum, staff can cancel the meeting beforehand and not gather a few people here and then have to cancel it. And then we can give the public notice that the meeting is going to be canceled.
Can I add something? Can I add something to that? So Yasmin Bustamante is the one, get familiar with the name because she's the one that will send out the packet. But in the email dialogue that contains a link to the packet, she also highlight, but it was bold in this last one, the RSVP by clicking here. So the email will constantly look very similar. That one key thing to click on to RSVP will be different. It'll say something similar, but you'll RSVP, click on there. It'll say how you plan to attend, virtually, in person, or you're not planning on attending. We're trying to do this for all of them because we've had a struggle making certain we have a quorum. Not for this meeting, we've only had two so far, but we've had it for others. So that's super important to key in on that dialogue in that email.
All right. If for some reason the start time for the meeting comes and you don't have a quorum, then you just need to announce so that if there are members from the public, just let them know, hey, we can't start. We got to wait for our quorum, so they don't just think. Next slide is just a no quorum, no meeting. So this quorum, there's 11 members on this committee, so a quorum is 6. You have to have 6 participating for anything. We frequently get the question from a lot of boards and committees that, well, if we don't have a quorum, we can still discuss the items on the agenda, but not vote. Can't do anything. If you don't have a quorum, your meeting doesn't go forward. Same thing as if you lose your quorum at some point during your meeting, it has to stop. Done, and can't keep going on and discuss things. Slide 9, which Dr. Somerhalter did today, you do the roll call. Staff can do it, or the chair or committee member. One thing that we like to reflect for the minutes, if you have a committee member that comes late, the chair may want to say Dr. So-and-so or Ms. So-and-so or whoever just joined our meeting, and it's 10 o'clock. And if somebody leaves early, has to leave for the day, it's good to announce on the record that one of the committee members is leaving the meeting. So that, again, this is all for transparency purposes. If you've got public listening, or observing, that way they're going to know what's going on. Slide 10, probably the most important thing on this slide is to avoid side conversations and whispering to each other. So when you're discussing a case, it's just, again, for appearances, we don't want to have any kind of chit chat going on. If you have a comment that you want to make, and put it on the record for everybody. Again, these are all recorded, and we want every statement to be on the record if we ever have to go back and review it. And I'm going to turn it over to Scott for his slides.
Sure. Okay. This sort of piggybacks on the last one. It has to do with the meeting clarity and the proceeding of the meeting. It's important that only one person speaks at a time, and that speakers are clear, don't interrupt or speak over each other. One reason this is so important is always remember that the committee and the board is exercising a governmental function, and the public has a right to know how governmental power is being exercised. So if they're coming down here to see you, it's important that they can understand who's speaking, that people aren't speaking over each other. Dealing with disruptions, slide 12, Again, the public has the right to attend and take photographs and audio record or video record, but they can't disrupt the meeting. The chair has the ability to start the meeting, stop the meeting, tell someone they're not allowed to speak, to have somebody removed if necessary. I mean, the chair really has the ability to manage the meeting. I've not been in a situation where there's really been too much of a disruption in a meeting yet, but if there is at any time, Mr. Chair, if you're ever unsure, you can always ask either Brian or I, or if Mary is here, Mary, and we'll be able to, happy to give you a hand with meeting management, but I do not permit members of the audience to shout out. Continuing on to slide 13, again, you can give them a warning, and you can tell them they'll be asked to leave, and if necessary, you can have security escort them out. And you are performing a governmental function, and you have the ability to continue to perform that function. Slide 14. This is very important because it's, again, with the powers you're exercising, it's important the public know what you're doing. That's why we have the agendas and why we post them the way we do with this. You would be announcing the agenda item by name and number so that whoever's in the public who may have an interest in that item knows what item you're discussing and is able, if you allow them, to take part in the discussion. Don't just say next item because people in the audience may not have an agenda. With slide 15, again, you may take items out of order. If somebody isn't here for an item, you can always just jump to the next item. Unless for some reason there is an item on the agenda that has a specific time next to it. If something's agendized for 2:30, you cannot begin it till at least 2:30.
I think that might happen, Ryan, if you do an investigative interview. It would probably be scheduled for a time specific, which means you can't start it before that time.
Yeah, exactly. And you may be able to start it after that time, but you can't start it before that time. And again, the idea is to let people know in advance so they can be present for a specific item if they have an interest in it. General guidelines on slide 16, speak loudly and clearly, which is always my problem. I tend to have a very soft voice. So definitely enunciate. Don't mumble. Don't talk into papers. The audience should be able to hear and understand you. You know, use surnames, not first names. Again, as Mary mentioned, the public perception is important. What you're doing here, you represent the government of Arizona, and so we need to comport ourselves in such fashion. Slide 17. Eating during a committee meeting looks bad. Obviously, we're in Arizona, and we dehydrate very quickly, so I think water is probably allowable. Apart from possible conversations with staff, avoid talking about committee business on restroom breaks and lunch breaks, and no private chats during a remote meeting. This is very important for a variety of reasons. The easy one is the private chats. There shouldn't be any private chats because, again, the public has a right to know what the committee is discussing because you are carrying out public business. The talking on restroom breaks and lunch breaks, meeting room, hallway, elevator, stairwell, you run two risks, really. The first one is inadvertently having a quorum present. You start discussing something on the agenda, and there are six of you in the room. You're now holding an illegal meeting. The other risk is if you go out and hop on the elevator, and you're talking to somebody about something that just happened in the meeting. For all you know, somebody with an interest in that agenda item might be on the elevator, or you might disclose confidential information, which would be very bad things. There are a variety of reasons to just keep committee business. Guidelines, again, always be respectful, treat people with dignity and respect, pay attention, and look like you're paying attention. This is something that's very, very important. I have seen people before in the audience who have noticed at different meetings when somebody's on an iPhone, and you can tell they just, you're discussing a case which is of vital importance to them, and they see that somebody's looking at an iPhone and that they're not aware of what you're doing, and so it just creates a bad impression.
What if it's an Android?
Sorry?
Android's okay.
If it's an Android, you get cool points.
Yeah. Sure.
Slide 19, same thing. Turn off cell phones, put them on vibrate. Standard no sending or reading emails or text messages or conducting internet research. And the internet research is important for a couple of reasons as well. The one being that you're not necessarily following what's happening with the rest of the meeting. The second reason is that all committee members should have the same information. You should be making a decision together as a group based upon all having the same information in front of you. If one of you has different information, then we potentially have an issue with the investigation. So if you ever do come across information that all committee members should have in considering a case, give it to Ryan, and he would be able to make sure that it's distributed to all committee members. But you shouldn't be doing any independent research to begin with. We should provide you everything you need. And a general rule on slide 20, it's basically the headline test. If you wouldn't want a remark to be posted on the internet or the newspaper, don't say it. This is something that I absolutely guarantee at some point, maybe not with this committee, but at some point there is going to be a reporter in a good 30-40% of board meetings or reviewing audio from various meetings. And sometimes they are looking for something that can be used for a different purpose than that for which it was intended. So do be careful of how you phrase things and what you say. And with that, Mary, do you want to?
Sure. All right, slide 21 is just to be as familiar as you can with the board statutes and rules that pertain to unprofessional conduct and discipline. And I don't know, are they going to have those available to them during the committee meeting?
Yeah, so I don't think that they were included in this packet, that we include them in every packet that goes before the board. They'll be at the, let me stop sharing my screen real quick for a quick second, and I'll show you where they'll fall. Give me just 1 second, Mary, sorry. All right, now I gotta go back. Okay, so here is the packet it's the electronic version. And oddly, the ones that are attending in person receive the least information, but I'll try to turn my screen here in a second. So on the left-hand side are all those bookmarks over here. And at the bottom, if you were to scroll all the way down to the bottom, right underneath adjournment, which is the last thing, in red it'll say statutes and rules. Those will also be bookmarked, starting with 1201, which is definitions, going all the way through rule, which is, I think, Article 18 is the furthest. The packet will include that from this point forward. Yasmin, would you mind writing a note to just send the electronic version as we currently have it to all the committee members so that they have it just as they review pack materials anyway for the board? But we will make certain that it'll always be with the packet as well. And any updates that will come because of laws that pass through legislation, we'll work on getting new versions out to you when they come out, but it'll always be in your packet.
Go to slide 23. And just to talk a little bit about the statutes and rules, did they get the other training manual?
Yes, it's in the packet. Yep.
So the other training manual that you got goes in a little more detail on professional conduct and the types of discipline. And as you do these meetings and review the cases, you'll get more familiar with them. But in the beginning, it may take you some time just to kind of familiarize yourself with what the grounds of
for discipline are. So slide 23, a little bit about just resolving complaints. We already talked about you shouldn't go out and do your own investigation or research. If you do that, it could be that you'll have to recuse yourself from a case. That's not always the case, but it could happen. Now, professional boards and committees put professionals on for a reason, because you have the expertise. So you can apply your own expertise. You know what the standard of care is for a particular case. You should articulate that and share that. And that's why the legislature formed the professional board, because of that reason. So the next slide, 24, talks about what we call priors. So you are going to get complaints against licensees who you've seen before. And many of them will be at every meeting, maybe. So you're going to maybe remember a case from before where the licensee did something bad. You can't use that to make a determination that, oh, they must have done the same thing in this case. The only time you can use past discipline is if you make a determination that there's been unprofessional conduct or some type of violation in the case that's before you, and then you consider a prior discipline as what we kind of refer to as an aggravating factor to determine the appropriate sanction. So if there's someone that's received non-discipline continuing education in a prior case, and they're still continuing to engage in the same conduct, you might want to consider escalating. Maybe now it's going to be disciplinary continuing education. So you can, there's a significance to past discipline. It just can't be considered too soon in the process. 25. This is just kind of a 1 through 5 questions to ask when you're reviewing complaints. First, you determine what the allegations are, what information is needed to decide if those allegations are true. Do you have enough information, or does the case need further investigation? What information is credible and persuasive? And if all the allegations are true and the evidence is there, then what penalty should the committee be recommending? So we always try to get boards and committees, when they're reviewing complaints, to be consistent. So you don't want to be arbitrary. You don't want to give somebody a non-disciplinary sanction, so order them to take non-disciplinary continuing education, and then looking at the same set of facts with a different licensee, you decide, you know, they need to be suspended. So you want to be consistent, but there's a caveat that, you know, the first person may not have any disciplinary history, and the second person, while it's the same type of conduct, may have been before the board before. So that can provide a basis for giving maybe a little harsher sanction. So it's always, you know, the board's goals are always to be not to be arbitrary and capricious and to be consistent, but every case is going to end up with the same resolution. 27, carrying out business. This kind of just goes back to process. So as a committee, you act as by majority vote. So, you know, more yeses are going to win. Like you just did with the minutes, every action that you take requires a motion, a second, and then an affirmative vote of the majority of the quorum. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Robert's Rules, which is kind of out there. A lot of boards and committees think they have to follow Robert's Rules. That's not a requirement. So you might want to use it as a guide. A couple of agencies used to, I'm not sure they do anymore, actually have it in their laws that they have to follow Robert's Rules, but the majority of them don't. So we've kind of used them loosely. I think in Robert's Rules, you can't have a discussion before you actually make a motion and have a second. That doesn't really apply here. You can discuss a case, sometimes puts things in perspective for the committee members so that you can get to the point where you want to make a motion. So every once in a while I hear somebody say, oh, we can't talk about that till somebody makes a motion, but that's not true. Only one motion at a time, and best practice is that the chair does not make motions or second them, but the chair can vote. Now, if you have complete silence, Mr. Chair, and you want to move things along, we won't yell at you if you make a motion. So after you're recognized by the chair, you can make a motion. Your language is, I move that, or I make a motion that we recommend that the board dismiss case 123456. You don't want to say, so moved. So if the discussion is such that it seems like or everyone's kind of on the same page, or staff throws out an idea, how about if the committee wants to consider this? Don't just say so moved. And again, it goes to so that we have a complete record. We want to know what you're moving, what's your motion. If you need help articulating a motion, staff or Scott or I or whoever your attorney is can always assist you. 32. And I'm going to defer to staff a little bit on this, just because in today's technology, do you still have somebody actually write the motion down?
We have Yasmeen.
Yasmeen writes the motion. Good. I think that's a good practice. So Yasmeen will make the motion. It's not her job to clean up your motion. So it's your job as committee members to articulate it.
I agree.
You know what you want to say. She would have to be guessing. So it's always do staff a favor and make your motions as clear as possible. An adequate motion uses clear and understandable language. I'm on 33 now. An example we put on there, I move that we recommend that the board issue a letter of concern, and then you articulate what that concern is. Dr. So-and-so is, you know, needs to do a better job of documenting health history, or however you want to phrase it. The one thing that differs between the committee and the board, obviously, is the committee is limited to making recommendations. You don't have the authority to make any final actions. So your motions are always going to include, I move that we recommend the board take the following action. As you probably gleaned just in your couple meetings, you have a motion maker, and then you need a second. If a motion does not get a second, that motion dies. And then a new motion needs to be made. 35, we kind of talked about discussion. After the motion is made, it's always a good practice for the chair to say, is there any discussion or any further discussion? Should anybody who wants to make a comment on a motion should do so. Again, kind of being respectful and not talking over anybody. Don't interrupt people, because then the record can become unclear and be confusing if we have to go back to it. Probably one of the best pieces of advice we can give you is that, you know, read your material before you get to the board meeting. It's going to make your meetings more efficient, and you're going to have better discussions. It's often obvious that if we have committee members that are unprepared. Now, we all, you know, everybody's very busy and have a do, but to the extent you can, they'll get the cases in advance, right?
2 weeks.
Okay. Yeah. To the extent you can review them and, you know, you can jot down notes, kind of think, the case should go, that's going to really help help your meetings go a little smoother.
Can I add something? So a lot of times you'll sit in some of the meetings, whether it's committee or board, and you'll hear a ton of discussion. People just keep talking. Don't ever be afraid, especially as a chair, mm-hmm. to get a motion going, because you could have discussion all day long because everybody has an opinion. So I would just, after people state their discussion, and you kind of have a consensus of where things are going, I would get a motion going, get a vote, and then if we need to change for a new vote. The other thing is you don't have to wait until the motion and the second to discuss the case. The discussion has already been occurred because you've called the item. There are members that will often wait, and I'm looking at Mary because we've laughed about this in one particular instance. And people wait till the motion and the second, and then they think that's the only time for discussion. It's not. So it's just, is there any further discussion before we have a vote? So that was the only thing I wanted to add.
So Mary, are you recommending that we have discussion before the motion, but not necessarily?
You can. I just think sometimes it facilitates the making of the motion if you kind of get a little bit of a dialogue going.
Okay.
And then somebody can pop in.
Okay. Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Are we using Robert Rules of Orders?
Robert's Rules of Orders? No, it's not required. You can use them as a guide.
Yeah.
But you're not required to follow them.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. All right, slide 39. So you make the motion, you got your second, you have discussion, then vote maybe by group voice vote or roll call. The board in certain instances is required to do roll call motions when they are going to discipline somebody, and that's by statute. The committee is not covered by that. You may want to do roll calls depending on who you have remote.
Looks cleaner.
You have to kind of see how it goes. You're not required by law to do a roll call, but if you think it's going to be clearer for your record, you can do that. No anonymous votes or secret ballots, and no voting by proxy. So if you can't be at a meeting, you can't give your vote to your friend and say, hey, well, for this case, here's my vote. That's not allowed. And I have had a couple people do that over the years.
But every committee member will get the entire packet of material. And if there's a specific matter that you are very passionate about, and you want your passion to be heard, you can send an email. This doesn't happen. It's very rare. And we can read it into the record, but it will not count as a vote. It'll just be your statement about the case. Yep. But if you're conflicted, it won't be read.
Can't be mean in your email.
Yep.
All right, slide 40, some more on voting. It generally helps if the chair repeats the motion right before you call for the vote. That way everybody's clear on what they're voting on. You want to avoid a situation where you think you're voting yes on one thing, and then after the fact you realize you voted the opposite way that you wanted to. So if you're not clear on it, have it reread, and if you need to have more discussion, you can have more discussion. So the chair asks, once you've got everything seconded and discussed, all those in favor, all those opposed, if anybody abstains, and we'll get into that a little bit later, if for some reason you didn't get a chance to read materials or read a certain case, if you got up during one of the case discussions, use the restroom or take a break, and you don't feel like you have enough information to vote, you can all do what's called abstain. Not a recusal, it's just I'm just not going to vote on this one. And then after everything takes place, the chair announces the result. Motion passes unanimously, or motion passes 6-4 or 6-5. If there's a tie, the motion fails. You have to make a new motion. Again, we talked before, the chair, you can go ahead and vote. All right, we talked about if you're participating remotely, so that's slide 42. All right, I'm going to turn it over to Scott for recusals.
All righty. Yes, recusals are very important because, again, you're performing a governmental function, and there will be some matters that you won't be able to or want to take part in for one reason or another. The first one is recusal, where you remove yourself in order to avoid a conflict of interest or other impermissible circumstance. There may be a case that comes up, for example, where there's a complaint about a specific dental business, and it turns out that you are a 75% owner of that business. That would be a mandatory recusal. You would have a conflict of interest at that point, and you would want to not take part in anything that comes before the committee. Essentially, you're disqualified, and in the strictest sense, as the slide says, you should actually leave the table. Now, occasionally, we don't make people do that if it's a very busy meeting, there are a lot of things going on, but it can be helpful to push back from the table when that agenda item comes up, so that way even the public sees that you're not participating in that matter. Again, recusal is mandatory for statutory conflicts of interest and for bias, prejudice, and prejudgment. Slide 44. Again, if you have a conflict, you have to recuse. Consult the board's attorney. This is something you can contact either Ryan, Mary, or me at any time if you think you might have a conflict of interest with a matter. And it is always safest to check to see if you have a conflict of interest. You'll never get in trouble for asking us.
With the caveat, though, that we cannot make the decision.
That is,
we can guide you and go over the law with you, but in the end, it's your decision as to whether or not you should recuse from it.
That is very true. Nobody can make you recuse from something. It's a decision that you make for yourself. I've found a good rule of thumb often is if you are going to ask whether or not there's a conflict, there may be something there, potentially.
And when you have a committee this big or a board, you've got 11 members, so, you know, sometimes you just want to err on the side of caution. It's a lot more crucial when you've got a three-member committee, and, you know, if you lose one, it can affect your quorum. But when it's a public body that has several members.
Yeah.
Sometimes I always tell people to kind of use it as a chance to take a break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Safest error on the side of caution with that. Yeah. Now, on the slide, they say penalties for violating conflict of interest laws include criminal prosecution, civil lawsuit, and removal from office. That is all absolutely 100% true. That is something that I've never had a committee or a board fall afoul of, but if you do have a statutory conflict, you would definitely want to consider recusing from discussion of the matter. On page 45, or slide 45, they get into the definition of statutory conflicts of interest, substantial interest in a board decision. This boils down to pecuniary or proprietary interest, direct or indirect, or other than a remote interest, and is where you have that interest or a relative has that interest in something that's coming up before the committee, essentially. Spouse, child, parent, grandparent, sibling, or in-law, disqualification is mandatory then. But again, I wouldn't necessarily stop it there. That's just where you have to declare the conflict. Again, if we have 11 members in the committee and something comes up and it's, you know, your brother-in-law's cousin and you knew him in high school, I'd err on the side of caution. Conflict.
Can I add something?
Yeah, Ryan.
So if there's a conflict that's declared by an investigator or a committee member mostly, staff will give you a conflict form. If you're in person, if you're virtual, we'll send it to you, sign it, send it back. We have to hold these in the case file. This is something that we failed to mention in our meeting this morning. To give a little bit of dirty laundry, we're going through an audit right now, and this is a ding that this board is getting pretty heavily on for not. They've declared their this board has done really well as far as declaring the conflict. We as staff just haven't done a good job of collecting and maintaining the noted conflict in the case file. So we have to manage that better, but we'll need your help. So if you declare a conflict on, I'll say, April Romero's file, then in person, you don't have to sign at that moment, but before you leave, we hope to get that signed. If we don't, we'll send it to you to get it signed and sent back in. An electronic signature is sufficient. We just have to note it in the file.
And Ryan actually just did a very good job of covering slide 46.
Perfect.
Hey, good job, Ryan.
Okay, nearly word for word. Slide 47, just push back from the table to that the audience knows that you're not participating. Another thing they point out on here, no gesturing, grimacing, shrugging, sighing, shaking of the head, et cetera. In other words, no giving the other committee members an indication that even though you're recused, well, you know, this is how I'd vote, or, you know, this guy's a terrible guy, anything like that.
Shaking your head.
Yeah. So kind of going, really, you know, things like that. Yeah.
And also you can't talk to any of the other committee members if you're recused, like on a break. Can't comment on. If you're recused from a case, you are completely removed from it,
yeah,
from beginning to end.
Yep.
Some members literally leave. They'll just walk out the door to prevent themselves, especially if they really have an issue. They just don't want to be a part of it. So I would recommend it.
And slide 48, other reasons for not participating, bias, prejudice, prejudgment. These are things that may not be statutory bases requiring you to recuse or disqualify yourself, but they are things that give the public perception there may be an issue, sort of a smell test. You know, the audience observing this, the public observing this. If somebody were to come up before this committee under investigation and they recognize you from high school, and they used to steal your lunch money every day, they're going to wonder if they're going to get a fair shake in front of the committee. So in that circumstance, even though it's not a statutory violation, it's safest to step back. The appearance of impropriety or any kind of any actual bias or prejudice or prejudgment that could impact your ability to in judgment on the case. And one other thing this ties into, before a meeting starts, again, with the appearance of impropriety, and I haven't seen this happen here at all, but I've occasionally seen this with other committees that I've seen. The committee members will, before the meeting, kind of mill around, which is perfectly okay, but they will occasionally talk to people who are there for the meeting and their attorneys, because they recognize them. They see them all the time. The same attorneys appear all the time, and some of the registrants, unfortunately, they see all the time. And so there may be some joking back and forth. If a complainant comes in and sees that before the meeting and then sees the board or the committee reviewing the case, there's an appearance of impropriety. They don't know if they're being treated fairly, because obviously they just saw you laughing with the attorney who is now representing the guy they complained about. So just a couple of things to keep in mind. Other reasons for not participating, on slide 49, if you have a strong feeling that could influence your opinion, the only facts that you should be looking at, who, what, where, when, why, and how, as impartially as possible. Should not have any strong prejudgments about any of those factors coming into the meeting. Slide 50, if you disqualify yourself on this basis, you announce non-participation immediately. Just say, I will not be participating in this matter. You don't have to get into details necessarily. You don't have to say, I knew him 20 years ago, and you know he should lose his license. You don't have to do that.
Sometimes we will have committee members or board members articulate. So let's say you do know somebody, but it's kind of remote. You worked with this person, but it's been 20 years ago. You may put that on the record and continue to participate, but you just say it's not going to influence my vote at
all, but I just want that out there.
Yeah.
Again, those are things you can talk to staff or Scott or I about before they come up. But it's, you know, and the thing about, again, because the committee doesn't take final action, there's still another step that these cases are going to go through that we can fix that we need to. But when we talk about the appearance of impropriety, what it saves is, you know, somebody gets to the board meeting and makes the argument. The complaint is going to say to the board, well, you know, the committee was biased because I saw, you know, Dr. So-and-so or Ms. So-and-so talking to the licensee. It kind of takes that out of play, and then we don't have to deal with it.
And just to give you an idea of the type of situation that can occasionally come up, I sat with an investigative committee at one point that reviewed a case, which then went on to the board with a recommendation for discipline. And before the board meeting, the board staff became aware that one of the members of the committee also sat on another board, completely unrelated board. But he sat on the board with the complainant in this case. Disclosed it. Now, whether they had any kind of relationship, whether that would have impacted anything, doesn't matter in the slightest at that point. You've now got a situation you have to deal with. So these are the type of things that you may not think about at the time, but just always just contact Ryan, contact me, contact anybody on board staff, and we'll be able to figure things out. But we always, those are the type of things we need to know on the front end. It's a lot easier to deal with it then. Okay, slide 51. I think we pretty much covered, again, yeah, if you don't have actual bias or prejudice, consider the appearance of fairness, appearance of impropriety. 52, voluntary recusal. Yeah, you don't have to recuse if you're acquainted with a licensee. This is a question that comes up a lot. The thing is that most professions are much smaller than you think they are. And you do run across other practitioners all the time, and it's tough to really practice in an area without getting to know a lot of people. You're going to know a lot of the people. That doesn't mean you have to recuse. Again, letting us know is always a good idea. Being a member of the same professional association, serving on a committee with a licensee, it doesn't mean it's a mandatory recusal. It's just something that it's good to know from the board staff. Abstention. That's just declining to vote. You're not recusing. You're still participating. Abstention is important because a recusal will impact quorum, whereas an abstention isn't going to impact quorum. You're just not voting on the matter. But I wouldn't, if you do have an actual issue with a person, I wouldn't just abstain. I would recuse. There is definitely a difference in the two.
And then also, abstentions are kind of one of my pet peeves when they're used because you have a particularly difficult case in front of you and you don't, sometimes it's a he said, she said, and you don't want to vote because you have to make the decision. That's not appropriate. Really, when you just feel like you haven't not fully versed in the case, you just haven't had time to read it, break, those kinds, but don't use it to.
Slide 54, you cannot use your membership to obtain any valuable thing or valuable benefit. It should be fairly straightforward. Very similar to my job. If, you know, Ryan offered me a Maserati to caseload, you know, not saying I'd turn it down, but no. Actually, I would turn it down because it would be a violation, obviously. So committee members, yes, you can't accept anything, to have anything to do with your position. You are, again, performing a function of government. Recess versus adjournment. Temporary break is a recess. If you want to grab a snack, take a recess. If you want to have a quite frequently meetings, I'll have a 10-minute break, bathroom break, just stretch your legs break. The chair can call a recess at pretty much any time. Sometimes it's helpful to just, after a certain point in the agenda, just kind of ask different members, you know, do you think anybody like to take a 10-minute break? An adjournment, on the other hand, terminates the meeting entirely. And yes, turning alarms off before meetings is important too. If an adjournment ends the meeting altogether, if you take a recess, you can come back and continue with the agenda. Anything else on adjournments or?
No, just once, yeah. Once you adjourn, done, you can't come back. So that's why that terminology is important.
And adjournment is one of two ways to end the meeting. On slide 56, you can see it will also end with a loss of quorum. So effectively, if enough of you get up and leave the room, the meeting is over, and there's nothing we can do about it at that point. If any time we lose quorum, this is one reason why we pay attention to people online as well, because I can tell right now if any of you get up and leave, but if all of a sudden Ryan loses somebody online, I have no means of knowing. So we have to constantly monitor. As soon as we drop below six people, if we keep going forward, we're having an illegal meeting. We're in violation of open meeting. Well, we're actually not having a meeting. We would then be conducting business in violation of open meeting.
So this is Ryan. It would be super helpful if you attend virtually and you have to, whether you, I think Mary covered this early on too, if you came late to say, hi, this is Ryan Edmondson, I just joined the meeting, and then we can document the time. Or if the chair happens to see somebody, then state it out loud. That way we know. But the same is true when you leave. If you have to leave, maybe wait for a comfortable break in the conversation to interrupt, but just say, hi, this is Ryan Edmondson. I am letting you know that I have to leave the meeting for the rest of the meeting. Sometimes members will leave and they'll say, I have to leave momentarily. We just had this happen on one of our board meeting on Friday. We have a board member who sits on another board, and coincidentally, they had a meeting on the same day, but it was really just for introductions. So he said, I'm leaving, but I'll be back. So he left. We noted the time he left, and we noted the time that he returned. So if you're going to, in person, it's easy to pick the information up because we can see, like Scott said, but if you attend virtually, sometimes we'll be on a different screen like I am now, but I won't know that you left, so it's helpful if we know that you've left.
Yeah, and after the meeting, and well, on breaks as well, it's very important to remember again not to discuss committee business, because often, you know, take a break during a board meeting, go into a snack or a break room, get snacks, and somebody invariably will say, you know, wow, what about that last page? And immediately it's up to the Assistant Attorney General to stop a discussion, because you've probably got a quorum in the room or you're about to. So if they start discussing committee business or board business, you're now in violation. Avoid hanging out together, you know, after a board or a committee meeting, you know, as much as everybody likes each other and we understand people are social creatures, it's not a great idea to all go out to Denny's together, because inevitably
Denny's?
No. Right. Slide 57. We just wanted to throw out a few kind of significant parts of board cases and then open meeting law. So confidentiality is probably one of the most important concepts that we want the committee to be aware of. Everything you get, well, most everything, the majority of the information that you are going to receive about a case is confidential by statute. The mere existence of a pending complaint is confidential. So until it gets to the point where it's put on a public agenda, you can't share with anybody that, hey, you know, I just got this case against Dr. Stone. That would be violating the board statute. So when you get the materials sent to you, don't leave your computer open. If you print out the cases, don't leave them laying around your office or anybody can look at them. You really have to maintain the confidentiality. I don't know how, did you guys send this?
Yeah, we
it's password protected, right? Yeah.
Yeah, can I add on the password protected for one quick second since you just brought it up? So all future packets will contain tons of material that is confidential. Yasmin will send you two emails. The first will be the packet, and you must download it to your computer and then go to where you just saved it or downloaded it to. Usually it's just a downloaded folder. Reopen it, and it will ask you for a password. If you try to open it through the email, you will have challenges because it's doing it through HTML. The second email that you receive from Yasmin will be, it won't even contain anything in the subject, so it'll look a little bit wonky, but it's intended to do that so that it doesn't draw attention. Hey, like the subject is not going to say password. In the body of that email, it will just have the password. For those that are attending in person, the password will be what's on your computer. But the password will be similarly the same, if not the same, each meeting. So don't share the password except for the committee members, because it'll be the same password. So you'll get two emails, again, to reiterate. One is the packet that's password protected. The second one, no subject, and only the password.
I believe Dr. Caputo has a question.
Okay, thank you for monitoring that.
Hey, Ryan.
Yes.
Have you guys ever looked into something like Google Authenticator?
No, and only because I don't even know what that is, and I appreciate the it actually goes to our intelligence here with regard to IT. We struggle oftentimes just to even have the makeup in the boardroom, just working within the confines that the state offers. Sometimes the resources aren't that good. But did you call it Google Authenticator?
Yes.
It's
basically a service that Google provides for you that it protects your information, and you only can access it through you could do different devices, but you have to have the authenticator, and it takes a number that it generates randomly, and that's how you gain access. It just prevents you from always having to create passwords for things, and it just does it for you.
It's a super awesome suggestion. We wrote it down. I think we're going to look into that, and we may add that as part of not only this committee, but maybe the other committee and board as well, and maybe even just giving information to the investigators.
I just think with the amount of work that you do that I'm sure is password protected, that might be a good way to do it. Anyway, thanks.
Good suggestion. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Slide 58. We only have a couple more to go. Confidentiality continued. Complainants and patients' names are confidential. So when you're talking about a patient, based on the records, the way that we avoid having to do everything in an executive or private session is to just use it. Sometimes, you know, mistakes happen and names get said. What we try to do is take them out of the minutes, but out at a in real time, but so we just ask to be cognizant. People that come before you, I don't know how often people are actually going to be here to talk about their case, but the chair is always a good idea for the chair to ask them to just use their initials, not announce their name. And just a couple additional open meeting law requirements. Slide 59. We talked about, you know, the whole purpose of the open meeting law is or transparency, so that the public knows what public bodies are up to. So there are certain times that public bodies can go into what's called an executive session. For this committee, I wouldn't anticipate it too much, but there is an exception to receive legal advice. Obviously, you need one of your lawyers in that executive session in order to get legal advice. And then there's another exception to review confidential information. So it doesn't happen that often, but there might be a circumstance where you would convene into an executive session to do that. It has to be on the agenda that there is a possibility that there could be an executive session, or you're not allowed to do it. So Scott and I, one of us will always review the agenda to make sure all the right parts are on it. Probably the main thing about an agenda is
committee, you're bound by what is on your agenda. You can't stray from that. So if something comes up that's not on the agenda, but you want it to be on a future agenda, then you just ask staff. Your one is come back. Slide 60. Just a couple pointers on, because in this day and age when we deal with email frequently, when you get an email from board or staff, do not hit reply all if you want to respond. Once you hit reply all, it goes out to the entire committee, and now you have a communication with more than a quorum, and that technically is a meeting. Usually it's something pretty innocent like, oh, I'll be able to attend the meeting, or I can't attend the meeting, or want to ask staff a question, and it happens, where, you know, just human nature to hit it, so it's not the end of the world, but we try not to hit reply all. And especially, you don't want to be communicating with a quorum about the substance. And you have, that is a meeting, and that is something we would have to deal with. So it's just a general kind of get yourself in the habit of not hitting reply all on anything. If you have a question on a particular complaint that's coming before you, it's perfectly fine for you to communicate with staff. Do that. We don't encourage committee members to talk to each other. What can happen, what we refer to as splintering the quorum. If one committee member reaches out to another one and says, hey, what are your thoughts on this case against Dr. Jones? And then you talk to enough committee members to ask the same question that all of a sudden you've now pulled a quorum of the committee. You have a meeting, even though you didn't do it as a group. It adds up to a meeting. And again, something that we would have to fix and address. But you can always call staff. That's not a violation of the open meeting. And you also don't ever want to communicate with a complainant orally. And this does happen occasionally. A licensee who has a complaint will reach out to, maybe they know one of you, call you and say, hey, I got this complaint that's coming before you. You know, do you have any tips for me? They may want to just start talking about it. So in those instances, you just need to say, I cannot talk to you. May want to reach out to Brian or staff, and they'll help to the extent.
I just add one thing to that, Mary. We've talked a lot about how you can inadvertently have a quorum by discussing the wrong thing with the wrong number of people. I'm not sure we actually did cover specifically in the slides of what it is you can't be discussing. Basically, anything that either is coming before the committee or that could come before the committee would be committee business. So if you're going to talk to six people in this committee, it can't be about anything the committee is reviewing or that could come up before them. That's a pretty broad topic because it could cover it could cover instructional issues that may come before you. It could, so anything related to dentistry, just be careful about.
Two comments. The reply all, we try as staff to not put you in a position of fail. So we'll send those in a blind copy. So if you accidentally hit a reply all, it would only go to people that were carbon copied or the two. So hopefully we won't get into a position where we actually put you in that position, but that's one. The other issue is all of you are licensees licensed by this board, and you have your information is public. So if somebody, and this just happened this week, somebody, a licensee, a complainant, it could be anybody, but generally it's going to be like what Mary was talking about, a licensee. They'll want to speak to Dr. Hero because he was the board president, or Dr. Morrow because he made a motion. We're not prevented from giving the information for them to contact you, but we do our best to prevent them from contacting you, to put them in a, to put you in a position where you have to say, I can't speak to you about this. Because the only reason why this person's trying to contact Dr. Hero or whoever made a motion is simply to try to find out more information. Why would you think that? Why do you think this isn't a complaint or whatever? So your information is public. There's information that they can get all over Google. But we as staff will do our best to prevent them from contacting you in a kind of a harassing way to get information.
If they do contact you, just immediately contact Brian or board staff or me or Mary.
All right. One thing that's not on the PowerPoint that I was thinking of while we were talking. So part of being a member of a public body is you're also bound by the Arizona Public Records Law. So any emails that you're receiving or any communications you're receiving in your capacity as a committee member have to be retained, even if it's on your personal computer. So it's a little bit tricky in this day and age with everything's electronic. It used to be a lot easier, you know, when people look at their materials and everything kind of in a package, you could just leave everything behind. And you don't necessarily have to save packets because all we need is a copy that the board will maintain, but any emails that you receive or send have to keep. Ryan will tell you what your retention schedule is, and that's in the event there's ever a public records request. We will reach out to you, staff will reach out to you and say, it doesn't happen a lot, so I don't want to scare all of you, but there have been instances have to reach out to the individual board members or committee members and say, hey, do you have any emails that relate to and those will happen.
And the board generally will, as staff, especially if it's correspondence to and from the board, will have the to or the from. So Mary's correct. It's rare that it comes up, but it does come up. It came up with the funeral board a couple of years ago. And even the director, now she, that's why I have two phones. Just be careful even on texting.
Yeah,
because
right.
They took her phone, even though she wasn't super worried about like private information, it's still her phone. And they took her phone and basically scoured it to make certain. And they did actually find stuff, communication to and from board members. So be careful
yeah,
on
that's an
texting.
Excellent point. And just, I always tell the attorney,
pick up a phone.
My group, is you just don't ever text anything substantively. If you want to talk to somebody, say, hey, be available for a call. That should be your text, not blah, 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 the whole substantive. Because he's right. I mean, if it's on your personal phone, you don't get to say, sorry, it's on my personal phone. They're going to take it and they can look at it. So just a good rule of thumb, and for emails as well. The less paper trails, the less you have to worry about it.
Anybody want to quit?
One other point on that as well with the emails, how you phrase things, because
yeah,
if an email does get out in public, don't write anything in it you wouldn't want to have appear in the Republic.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
We can't save you from that.
Right. Yeah, if you have feelings about people in government or anybody, don't email them.
Yep.
Public record is any document that's created in the course of the agency performing its function, and you would be performing the function of the agency.
All right. That's all we have. Any questions for now?
Mary, Scott, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Yasmin, is this available, or can we make this available to all the committee members?
I can email it to the committee.
Yeah.
The presentation?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. Perfect. Okay, agenda item 6, items for review, discussion, and possible action on board recommendations. Review of investigation 20200264, Dr. Shada Zahiri, Dr. Cutler.
Filed a complaint against Dr. Zahiri because she diagnosed a broken tooth and gave her some pain meds and antibiotics and numbed her up to get her out of pain and refused to treat the tooth. And she's alleging that she, quote, stated the patient was not a good fit for the office. The response that we got from Dr. Zahiri was that was not the case. The reason why they did not treat her was because she was refusing to, she didn't have the funds to start the treatment for one. And when she offered to just take the tooth out only and not through the bridge at the same time, she refused. And she also tried to negotiate her insurance portion of the payment with the provider, which we all know is not legal. And so she decided that she wasn't a good fit for the office. And consultant, after reviewing the case, did not find deviation.
And the initial complaint was for? Abandonment?
Correct. Yeah. The allegation that I wrote was for the patient abandonment.
Dr. Sommerhalter, do you mind if I introduce this item a little bit to kind of clarify why it's on this agenda? And
okay.
So this is Ryan Edmondson again. So this item 6A, not necessarily 1, but 6A, will be the meat of your agendas going forward. We wanted to put 1 on this agenda to give you an idea of what it looks like. And then if you look at the packet, it's bookmarked where we try to give the most pertinent information first, which is the consultant's report. And in this case, it was Dr. Cutler's report. And then we kind of go sequentially after that with the complainant, the investigative response, their records and images. Oftentimes there's other subsequent treating dentist records that will be part of this, but it's all material to help you come up with a recommendation. You guys are an advisory committee giving recommendations to the board. It's up to the board, and the board will not always come through with what you recommended. And I'm certain that there will be times that it will frustrate you. But please keep in mind that the job is still important. And I think it's this opportunity to have this peer review, transparent, process is much better than the current process. And the recommendation is still, because it's peer reviewed, it's 11, potentially 11, and all 11 are here today. It doesn't have to be unanimous. It just has to be the majority. And therein lies the beauty of people's opinions and why we have these. And so yours will be a recommendation. So that's how it'll always be titled. So when you make a motion, it'll be a motion to recommend that the board and it's issue a letter of concern, dismiss the case. You have ED executive director terminations are on the record, or they're in your purview as well, where you say, I think this should be executive director terminated, and that happens as well, which means it doesn't even go before the board the full file. It's, you guys have looked at it, you don't think this is either within the board's jurisdiction, all kinds of things. So it can be executive director terminated. We may have to go back to item 5 here in a minute, but let's finish out this, because Dr. Dubkin is present too, and he provided a considerable amount of work to try to help guide this. And we can cover like the roles of staff, investigators, as opposed to consultants, committee versus board, those types of things. So right now, what Dr. Sommerhalter has done is something that will happen every single meeting. There will be at least one investigator present in person, hopefully. And we have 2, Dr. Berschler is here and Dr. Cutler in person. Dr. Dubkin is attending virtually, but they'll be here to summarize all complaints if needed. And I think Dr. Cutler did a great job kind of hitting the highlights, but that's the whole purpose of getting the packet 2 weeks prior so that you guys have an opportunity to look and come up with whatever you reviewed, comments, questions, concerns, whatever it is. So now that she's summarized it, back to you, Dr. Sommerhalter, you would just ask, does any committee members is there anybody that wants to discuss this case?
Yeah. Any comments from our committee members?
Virtually or in person?
If not, the chair will entertain a motion.
Dr. Caputo does want to discuss something. Sorry, you don't see this, Dr. Sommerhalter. Go ahead, Dr. Caputo.
I just had a question regarding the response to the patient from the office saying she wasn't a good fit. I didn't see it in any of the documents, and so I'm just not sure if it was asked for or not. But was the patient given a dismissal letter or any indication that they would no longer be a patient at the office that was otherwise not in the packet, or do we even know?
This is Dr. Cutler. There wasn't a formal letter that was given to the patient when patient was repeatedly refusing to cooperate with the office and then asking the respondent to possibly participate in something that is with the insurance, cutting part of the payment for the insurance company. She did tell verbally to the patient that she might want to look for another dentist to finish the case. And right. Technically, she never actually even started the case.
Right. Yeah. No, thank you.
And I actually have a question, too. It isn't specifically about the case. It is and it isn't.
State your name.
Say my name. This is Deb Kappas.
Yep.
Oh, sir. Okay. My name is Deb Kappas, and I just have a question kind of in general. When we're looking through these, there's one allegation in this case. If we look through and we're thinking there might be another allegation that would be appropriate, would that be something this committee would bring up and could be discussed? And could that even be like in just record keeping and like just anything?
So for those that are attending virtually, there's a bunch of head nodding yes in here. yes. And if the committee thinks that there's more that should be done in the investigation, you don't have to end the case today with a recommendation to the board. You can remand it back for further investigation. And look specifically at record keeping or something like that. You want to be careful not to get into a position where you're going on a fishing expedition, because I think that everybody on this committee could say, and I don't want to suppose that it happens in every office, but I think that everybody could admit that if somebody came into your office and wanted to look, they would find something if they chose to. So the point is not to go on a fishing expedition, is to kind of stay focused on the complaint. Oftentimes the complainant, not being a professional 95% or more of the time, doesn't know exactly what allegation to even claim. They just know that they've been harmed some way, physically, on the treatment, billing, whatever it is. And so there may be things that you know as a professional that they didn't say or see. This is the time to call that out. The investigator usually will try to pull everything from the records, though. Does that answer the question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Any other further discussion? If not, the chair will entertain a motion. If there is a motion, please state your name.
If I can help, this is Ryan, board staff. The motion would, I'm not going to state what I think it is. I'm just saying that you would state, I move that the committee recommend, and then you recommend whatever the recommendation is. You'll get Dr. Somerhalter will get a second, and then we'll vote. And
this is Tim Cross. I motion to dismiss the case.
We have a motion to dismiss.
I second the motion. The Sabah Kalamchi.
We have a motion and a second.
And it would be moved to recommend the board dismiss the case. Or would this be a ED term?
You could do either one. You could do a dismissal or ED term.
Okay, what would you prefer? I mean, it's.
Dismissal.
We have two hands raised. Okay, well then.
Since it was brought up, what's the difference?
So, do you want to answer this, Mary?
So, an executive director termination is something that
the executive director, Ryan, has authority by statute to dismiss a case, with the exception of malpractice cases or adverse occurrence cases involving sedation. So that means they never get to the board. The recommendation for the board to dismiss means it will go on a board meeting agenda.
So then if I'm hearing that correctly, that would be his discretion. How would we tell him to do an ED term?
So there is the statute for executive director termination is where there's a makeup of a committee, i.e. this committee, that makes the decision to ED term it. So then it would not be a recommendation to the board. It would just be, as a committee, we're going to ED term this. The board does not see anything other than it goes on a consent agenda with the file number, but we give the opportunity to the complainant to grieve the decision to ED term it. I would prefer them just to be dismissed. I'm not a huge fan of ED terms simply because it looks like I made this decision and people are attacking me. And my very first meeting that happened, I was only here for like 4 days. I'm like, I didn't ED term it. It was the previous executive director. So my preference is to, since they're coming on your case log or your case agenda, to either dismiss or hire, whatever it is that you decide, letter, concern, disciplinary action, non-disciplinary, whatever.
Yeah, personally, if I can just jump in here real quick, I think as a board, one of our responsibilities is to vote. And I think, again, to Mary's point about passing something on, I'd rather take you off the hook and go ahead and vote as a board. I think that's our responsibility. But I like the explanation.
Does that answer your question, Dr. Caputo?
Yeah, thank you.
Dr. Dodell, did you have a question?
No, I think my question was basically what has been discussed already, so it was kind of answered in the previous discussion.
Okay. Do you want to restate the motion, or do you want staff to restate the motion?
Yeah, the motion is to recommend to the board to dismiss.
Perfect.
There's no further discussion. Do you mind if I do a roll call?
No, I think it's probably safe if you have so many on virtual.
Does it mean roll call, please?
Somerhalder?
Yes.
Caputo?
Yes.
Cross?
Yes.
Odell?
Yes.
Ukami?
Yes.
Alamchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Levine?
Yes.
Wadahari?
Yes.
I think that's it for those that are present. Go ahead.
No, just say the motion.
Does anybody vote against it? I guess we did a roll call, so we don't need to do that. So
yeah, roll passed. Call.
Yep. Okay.
Unanimous.
Yes.
So if you don't mind, Dr. Somerhalder, can we go back to 5 real quick? Is Dr. Dovgan still here? I know he shut his screen off. He may have walked out. Can you call agenda item 5 again?
You wanted to add something to agenda number 5?
Yeah, I just wanted to go back. I want to point out a couple different things in the packet for agenda item 5. Are we sufficient? Did we call the matter back? 5? Okay. So do you mind if I...
No, go right ahead.
So again, this is Ryan Edmondson, board staff. On page 6 of the agenda, and I'll try to share my screen real quick.
Page 6 of the agenda?
I'm sorry. Page 6 of the agenda. Thank you, Scott. Page 6 of the packet.
Okay.
You'll see, and here's what I was talking about with the bookmarks over here, that if you click through, you just go through. But I'm going to go to this part. This is item 5. This is roles. I kind of did a little bit of an introduction here at the top of this page. But if you scroll through, I just wanted to cover a couple of things. This came up in the first meeting. We tried to help clarify a couple of people and the roles, your role, the investigator's role. What's the difference between the investigator and a consultant? Those types of things. This is in your packet. We can send this out also with the slides that Yasmin is going to send as well, so that you can save this in a separate spot and maybe not as a part of this entire packet. But essentially, this is staff's roles at the beginning. The investigator's role, there's currently, to not split hairs on terminology or identification of who an investigator is as opposed to a consultant, they used to be synonymous terms, and some of you are current consultants. So an investigator are those that we have that the board has contracted with to do kind of the lion's share of the investigations. Dr. Duggan, Dr. Cutler, Dr. Burschler, and Dr. Hampf. Dr. Hampf has since left. That's the email that you guys have seen, and it's been circulated in a couple of different media outlets that the board is also looking to fill that position. There may be money that we can actually apply to have more do investigations. Those, what, at least for the in staff, in maybe insider baseball terms, we call those folks investigators. Everybody else that does investigations is called a consultant, which can work collaboratively with an investigator to reach a conclusion. But ultimately, there's two different roles, an investigator and a consultant. They kind of did the same thing for a long period of time, and because of having so many complaints and being backlogged, we've actually spent some time sending some more back to consultants to do the lion's share of at least the work on that particular case, just because we just don't have enough manpower to cover all of these investigations, but we still want to move these through as quickly as possible. But so that's the difference. What I wanted to show you as well in this red part, is kind of what is changing in the capacity of a consultant as opposed to an investigator. Currently, what we want to see is the investigator do the majority of the work and reach out to any number of consultants to then finalize his or her decision as they write the report. Consultants will continue to be used as we need because we don't have all of them are general dentists, and they're going to have to reach out if there's an oral surgery, an anesthesiology case, an orthodontist case, or whatever. But they'll write in those opinions within those reports. The question came up, can a consultant sit on the committee? And the answer to that is yes. Dr. Caputo is one, Dr. Harris, Dr. Dodell, Dr. Fukami. Multiple people sit on this committee that are also consultants, and I've already reached out to Mary, and so I'm just passing out, and Scott, so I'm passing out the information. You can continue to do consulting work and sit on this committee. If you have one of those cases that you've consulted on come before this committee, you just declare a conflict and you cannot vote. And that goes back to the presentation that both Mary and Scott gave. So I just wanted to point out a couple of things here, and this starts on page 6. The other thing, and I'm not sure, and I'm not on my screen right now to see who's present. Does anybody have any questions before I move on to the next topic?
Brian, you might want to just clarify here, if you serve as a consultant in a case, you can still answer questions. It's not like a recuse. They can't vote. But you kind of take the role that Dr. Cox presents the case.
Yeah, so the board, thank you, Mary. The board, we only have one oral surgeon that sits on currently. We've reached out to two more. And coincidentally, the one oral surgeon that is a consultant sits on this committee, and he's also not present. But he does sit on this committee, and during those deliberations of those cases that he reviewed and gave an investigative report, you can ask Dr. Skip Harris direct questions. He just cannot vote on the case.
The role of those who are serving on the investigative committee, they would actually serve as a liaison on maybe each and every one, the sounds of it.
Yes.
So in that, is the person going to be potentially as the liaison and a consultant?
No, so all the cases, every single case that we're going to get in the board from now on, and we'll do this as a point forward. We won't go back and gather any that currently exist, but as a point forward, so the staff isn't trying to figure out who's going to be the lead speaker when the agenda item is on your agenda. We're going to assign early on, right when we get the complaint, an investigator and a committee liaison. So that if there's any question about, say the committee met and the committee voted to remand for further investigation, and then staff sends out a letter to the investigator, hey, the committee wanted you to look more on tooth number 9 as opposed to it looks like you concentrated on tooth number 8. Can you look back at the records and provide? If there was some concern that as staff, we gave the information incorrectly to the investigator could contact that committee member and say, hey, can you give me again exactly what transpired? Why am I looking at 9 as opposed to 8? So you would be the liaison between committee meetings, but also kind of a sounding board for either staff or the investigator or consultant. But a consultant will not be the liaison as well, because they would be conflicted on voting on that case. But that's a great point. This is something that's new to this board. You will have the opportunity to do investigative interviews, and that would be the only, I don't know if anybody noticed, but we don't have a call to the public on this agenda, and that's on purpose. We won't ever have a call to the public on this agenda unless you guys see fit. But it's on purpose because we want this committee to basically make decisions and recommendations. It is in an open meeting. People can attend, and it is, I think, that's transparent enough. But we're not inviting people to come and speak to this committee about a particular case. They'll still get that opportunity, that bite of the apple when they go before the board. But as you guys do investigative interviews, through an invitation, you would invite the licensee, him or her, to come and appear before the board with their attorney or not, where you would ask a ton of questions related to the investigation that would help you lead you to a final recommendation. But that investigative committee liaison would be the charged person that would do the majority. They would start the interview questions. That means that when they're done, everybody else gets an opportunity to ask questions too. But that person would be kind of the lead person to start the questioning of those investigative interviews. Does that answer your question, Dr. Fukami? You're welcome. Does anybody have questions online? Sorry, I need to stop sharing my screen for a second. Can I ask staff to look at hands raised? Because I can't do both at the same time. Otherwise, it gives that funky mirror picture. If nobody else has any questions on that, is Dr. Dovgan back by any chance? And I promise I'm not trying to make this meeting go as long as possible. but I think that Dr. Dovgan and Mary spent a considerable amount, other than the stuff that Scott and Mary have already talked about, they spent a considerable amount of time on this committee training. The only one oddity is it says the internal investigative review committee training. Internal is what we are currently. The investigative review committee is what you guys will is what we're becoming. So other than the first the internal, the rest of it has been prepared to hopefully help guide the process. And this starts on page 10. And if Dr. Dovgan is present, I wanted him to be able to maybe draw attention to something in particular. Mary, do you know of anything on this? Yeah. Well, with that, I don't want to spend a ton of time or keep people just to keep people, but does anybody have any questions on roles of the committee, roles of the board? And this is kind of a learning curve as we go through. I think probably for the first 6 or 7 meetings, I think it'll be a little bit challenging, but we'll get through it and you guys will be pros by the end of this year for sure. So, and I'll turn it back. Dr. Berschler, yeah.
Motion passed on this complaint. I don't know if we...
Yeah, it was the roll call vote.
Recommended.
Okay.
Yeah, it was passed. Oh, Dr. Caputo, go ahead.
So I know that there's a little bit of ebb and flow here, as we've been discussing, but generally this is how we will receive a matter that we are going to discuss.
Great question, and probably piggybacks after Dr. Ukami's question a little bit. As the liaison of a case, we as in staff are going to try to monitor how many cases are going out, because nobody should be inundated with multiple cases. Everybody's going to have multiple cases, but there's no investigative work that the committee liaison is going to do. It's just so that you have the information in real time. So the question that you asked, Dr. Caputo, and hopefully I'm going to answer this correctly, as a committee, whatever is on your agenda, every committee member will get. However, if you're the committee liaison on this case, nobody was, but Dr. Zahiri, if you were the committee liaison on this case, you would have received all the material as it came into the office. So you would, as soon as we get the complaint, we would search to get an investigator and a committee liaison. You would sign a conflict form that you don't have a conflict, stating you can take on that case. As soon as we got that, we would provide you a copy of the complaint, so you would know it right away. If you then, when we send out the letter to the licensee asking for the response, you would see the letter and you would see the response as soon as we got it. So then there's kind of a check and balance. Then it, other than staff trying to do all of this work, which we will continue to do, if we sent out a subpoena for records and we haven't gotten a response yet, as the liaison, you might be curious as to, hey, we give them 35 days. I haven't seen any records and it's day 60. You can reach out to any number of staff and say, hey, I just wanted to let you know that I just pulled up this case. I remembered we subpoenaed the records on December 31st. It's now March 4th, or excuse me, 8th. We don't have the records. So it kind of puts staff in a position of check and balance too. So Dr. Caputo, to answer your question directly, you will get it in real time, but as a committee, every case that goes on a committee agenda, all the material will go to everybody simultaneously, unless there's a conflict, a noted conflict that we know ahead of time.
So we will see, and I appreciate that, and I also appreciate clarifying the liaison, and that's something you had answered before. Sorry, I missed it. But where I'm also going at is just the format. So when we get it, sans being in a liaison position, an investigator will have provided their report.
You will get the complaint, the records, the images, all in real time. And then when an investigator's report comes in, you'll also get that as it comes in as well.
Okay. Thanks.
Say that again. Does that answer the question?
Yeah. No, thank you.
Okay.
But now I'm a little bit confused. This is Kappas. But as a committee member, if you aren't the liaison for the case,
you'll still get it all.
You'll still get it like this.
Yes.
It'll just be an agenda item, or this is the case, and you get it all just like it's presented here.
The goal is to have all the material to all of the committee members for everything that's on an agenda at least 2 weeks prior to the meeting to allow you to look at everything. I'm not going to tell you where to focus, but probably the biggest focal point will be the investigator's report or the consultant's report.
This is Tim Cross. How would we be made a liaison?
So again, it's kind of an arbitrary process because we don't know. I mean, like, you're an endodontist, so if a case came in, and it was endo-related, we might assign you as the committee liaison. And there's not a lot of work. The work will come in as the committee preps for the meeting 2 weeks ahead of time. But to avoid extra work for the committee liaisons, especially if you're going to have to do an investigative interview at a later date, that's why we're trying to provide it in real time. So as a complaint comes in, staff will send you, a committee member, a conflict form, and basically requesting you to be the committee liaison. That's it. And then if you sign that you don't have a conflict, then you would be assigned that case. It may be a geographical. I don't know why geography ever plays anything into this, but sometimes people think that because it's a Tucson dentist, that a Tucson committee member shouldn't be assigned to it because there may be a relationship already known. So maybe if it's somebody that's a well-known, I'm trying to think of a case we just recently had, and I can't remember the name, but it was a well-known orthodontist, and we couldn't get anybody to take the case simply because he was very well-known. So we had to look outside of Maricopa County that he didn't train. Apparently, he trained everybody in Maricopa County. So we might choose you, Dr. Cross, simply because of being in Tucson as opposed to Maricopa County. But we'll try to do it based on your specialty. So dentist anesthesiologist cases will likely go to Caputo. You would take endo cases. I don't know. Hopefully that answers the question, but we'll try to hit the specialties if we can, because I think it's the easiest way to do it.
That answers the question. Thank you. And then if you are the liaison, when we meet as a committee, are we the ones that are sort of leading the discussion, or is that how it works?
Yeah. Yeah, yep, exactly. So Dr. Sommerhalter, who's the current chair, would say, can we get a summary of the case either by the committee liaison or the investigator that's present? And hopefully the liaison is present and knows it well enough, but if they can't be present, then the investigator would likely chime in.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Any other questions? Does anybody have their hands? So let me just end it with both of these, or all three of these things, the PowerPoint that's in a PDF format, this guide that Dr. Dovgan worked with Mary. I helped some, but I'm not going to take any credit because, quite frankly, I didn't do much. And then this roles document, we'll send all of those out. If you have any questions between any time, feel free to reach out to me. I'll be happy to do it. But I want you guys to have all of these at your fingertips as opposed to being a part of this packet. And with that, I'll turn it back over to you to finish up the meeting, Dr. Sommerhalter.
We'll return to agenda item 7, discussion and possible action items for future meeting agendas. And I would say to our board members, if you have any, direct those to Yasmin to be put on the agenda, number 7, if they have any action items.
Okay.
Yeah, I might say one I'm going to have you put on as a vice chair, just in case I'm not here for any of the meetings.
Okay.
And hopefully someone that volunteers for that is able to appear in person. I think that's important. Right. Agenda item...
It's not another scenario.
It's job
item number 8.
So 6-7 will be 8. Next committee meeting dates, I think everybody has those. April 5th, May 10th, June 20th.
Jump in here real quick.
Sure.
These are tentative dates.
Tentative.
That staff has pre-selected. We tried to do a couple of different times. We've tried to send stuff out. We totally understand that people are going to have conflicts. It can't attend every meeting. We had that happen today with 2. And that's the beauty of what Mary was talking about earlier of having a large committee. If you start missing like multiple meetings in a row, that's when it starts to become a concern. So we've pre-selected this based on information that we've as staff gathered that Tuesdays and Fridays are the best. Fridays are covered a lot by anesthesia sedation committee and the board. So we pick Tuesdays. I understand that these are conflicts for some, but it's super challenging to try to get a date where everybody's in a super alignment of, yeah, April 5th is going to work for everybody. So if it's a majority that can meet April 5th, May 10th, June 28th, then we'll keep these dates. But now is the time to discuss these dates. Otherwise, the tentative nature of these dates that are on your agenda today become permanent. So you want to discuss these dates, to switch a date or a time. Go ahead, date, time. Can we discuss time? Because I think we're meeting at 2 and we have a hard stop at 5. If you have multiple items under, today it's item 6. One was super easy. We got through with a dismissal. I will tell you right now, the IRC, the current IRC that meets, we had 60 in our last meeting. I think 66 or something like that. With 11 people possibly speaking or giving an opinion on 66 cases, it could go long past 5. So keep that in mind on your start time as well. Right now, we'll keep it at 2, but it would be terrible to have 60 items on an agenda where people know people's lives are, you know, they know a matter's going before the agenda and we don't get to it. Granted, they're not able to speak and we're not allowing them an opportunity to speak, but I'm certain that they're going, this lady in particular will monitor the outcome of today's meeting. So keep that in mind as we pick these dates and the start time on when you would like to meet.
Okay. So I guess if there's no other questions, discussions.
Sorry, if I may ask one.
Go ahead.
So are we?
Let them know who you are.
Yeah, sorry, this is Fukami. So are we in current agreement that at least for April 5th, it will start at 2 p.m.? Is that the idea? Or
what we wanted is for you guys to take action as a committee. Staff wants you guys to take action as a committee to either accept these dates or pick new dates. Or accept some and not others, but we would try to get a consensus today. So that we share this building with 26 other or 25 other boards, so it makes it challenging to get a boardroom. Whether they're good or bad, they're neither consistent. But,
so these dates are pretty much it, and if we have a quorum, we're good to go.
If you guys vote today to accept these dates, yeah. We've already secured a boardroom for these dates, but we can certainly work to get a different room. But this is now the time to discuss whether or not these dates are going to work.
This is Walter Harry, and I brought up last time that I had conflict with many of these Tuesdays. It was not every Tuesday, but specifically these Tuesdays that was picked, especially the timing. So. But as Dr. Somersall mentioned, if this is majority, I don't think it worth mentioning that.
Yeah, I'm aware of the conflicts, and I think that that's what Yasmin tried to do in that poll she sent out to try to get more of a consensus. I think people are more inclined to speak their opinion when it comes in that type of a format than in the public format. But Dr. Motihari, if there's dates that you would propose different, now would be the perfect time to do so, just so that, and we can look and people can gather up their information. These are tentative, and some people probably penciled these already in for the calendar for the remainder of the year. And so that's why I think the discussion should be not me and the committee members, but the committee members amongst themselves on what dates work best for you guys.
So as you mentioned, yes, I did fill out the time and the suggested date, but I don't know what the result was, so I can discuss with somebody else, actually.
Do you have that in front of you?
Hey, Ryan. This is Tim. I just have a question in general about the meetings. Is the plan to keep an online meeting as optional moving forward?
So that's a great question. There's a lot of members that want to meet in person, and there's 3 that came in today. There's a lot of chatter about the virtual capacity of boards meeting virtually and in person in some sort of hybrid format. I'll tell you that I love the opportunity to do a hybrid. I will tell you that the boardrooms that we work out of are not conducive of a really good experience for everybody. For instance, we were able to share the PowerPoint with you guys today, but the 3 present today, we downloaded it on their computer so that they could kind of go along. They were not going, I mean, if they were tabbing and going to the page as it was being called out, they were doing fine. Otherwise, but they were not following or tracking on mine because I only had the opportunity to share it with you. So this is a very long answer to say that we would like to keep it hybrid for the members, especially because I know that Dr. Levine would have either a flight or a very long drive. But if there's an investigative interview, what I would recommend, especially if you're the committee liaison doing the lead on an investigative interview, we're going to ask that the licensee be present. I think it would be respectful if you were also present as the lead just because they made the time and commitment to come in. We would like to see that as well with our committee members. But I think a virtual meeting will always be available for the members. We won't likely, unless there's a specific reason or an extraordinary reason why a lead or a licensee needs to attend virtually, we likely would just pass it to the next meeting because I think it's important that they come and appear before the committee as opposed to attend virtually.
Well, I would think to the point made regarding time, this is a very good time, particularly if there's a situation where a meeting does run longer. I can speak for myself and maybe for Tim a little bit, but the drive from Tucson to Phoenix is getting increasingly more difficult, just a lot more traffic and a lot more challenges. And I've just noticed, I mean, I travel to Phoenix currently about 5 or 6 times a month, and I go to Winslow once a month, and it's just not getting easier with traffic. And so this time of day when the meeting starts might be okay. Getting home could be a nightmare. So it really is nice to have this format. And I would just say for someone who travels, in addition to what was already said, I like this kind of format. It's just a lot easier for us, particularly from a scheduling perspective as well.
If I may add, based on the responses provided on the Google form that was sent out, it seems that Friday mornings or Tuesday afternoons work well for the committee.
Friday mornings.
I would say as a general rule, mornings are never good for anesthesiologists. I mean, that's when we do our work. So we're always better in the afternoon in terms of just availability. But I'm game only because I've already looked through the current schedule. All of the times worked for me, and I've already put them in my calendar. But I also understand, as already been noted, that we're not all going to be able to meet on every day. So if there's Fridays that are better for folks and in the mornings, those just might be times that I might not be able to participate. Mornings are tough for me not to work, though.
Mary, if we make the meetings, because we're making the meetings hybrid, both in person and virtual for the committee members, if we make the notice the same for the public and then offer them the ability to attend virtually, they can go past 5, correct?
So not having anybody in the, and so we have to work on the wording.
Okay.
Got some in person. Yeah.
So the notice said it was in Boardroom C, but it's also offered virtually.
You're given the option of either, and then you got to keep this open.
You have to keep. Oh, okay. So if it's only virtual. If
it's only virtual, then it's okay though.
Okay.
If there's an option, then you have to keep it.
I'm just.
Did you say that it was open till?
The building's open till 6. Yeah.
Sukami, so is a discussion center more on which day or actual time?
Probably both. I think that if you could probably take a vote on these dates. It looks like Dr.
Is it impossible to start earlier at 1 p.m.? I mean,
yeah.
I might throw that out there. Does that make any difference to anyone? You're already walking out in the afternoon and you are able to start virtually. It seems like that would be a better possibility. But
does anybody have an issue with 1 p.m. start time? No?
No.
Interrupts the golf game.
shelter.
Is Kalamti, do you have a comment?
I do have a comment. Thank you. I concur with Dr. Caputo that we would like the option of the hybrid to have that option for us. I do like that. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that that's one thing we've agreed on so far is that we'll keep hybrid. And again, I want to be super poignant that if you do are the lead liaison for a case and we have an investigative interview, I don't think it's going to happen often, but if it does, it would be, I think, respectful to come in person. So,
yeah, I agree with that. And that will happen with enough notice for us to come in person.
Do you want to entertain them? Yeah.
She's typing her messages in the chat.
Oh, Dr. Levine, go ahead and speak. We don't keep a copy of the. In fact, I think this is something that the attorneys would have said earlier had they noticed. Anytime you want to make a comment, feel free to make it verbally because we can't keep a record of written chat.
Okay, perfect. I was just going to comment that I don't prefer the 1 p.m. time. The 2 p.m. would be more fun. Thank you.
Okay. So I think I'll just state from my own personal opinion and what I've heard from the board members. The board members picked this group of people specifically because they think that you would be the best members of, I don't know how many we had multiple applicants. And so I think that your expertise and knowledge is exactly what this board was looking for. And so if you can't attend a meeting, I think you'll just pick it up at the next meeting. We'll still provide you the information and you'll have the information so that it won't be like this huge leap from meeting to meeting because you will receive the periodic information. And if you can't attend, you can't attend. And so what I would request is that you just have a vote on either these meetings or somebody propose new dates because these are the only meetings that we have. These are the only dates we've heard so far.
Well, as I understand it, there's quite a bit of work that goes into the dates, number one, and number two, the availability of the room. And so wouldn't it be just an understanding that no matter where we play the game, as far as dates are concerned, it's either going to be convenient for one or inconvenient for another. So I don't know, unless the committee wants to get into switching days or things like that, I would suggest accepting these dates and see what happens. I think the only thing that's going to hurt is if we don't have a quorum, correct? That's
yeah.
I think it'll stop the meeting.
And we'll try to figure that out when Yasmin sends out the packet and asks you to RSVP. Just keep that cognizant of that to respond to the RSVP.
Well, it seems like not only whether you have a quorum or not, but also if the assigned liaison for that case.
Great comment. The case will move forward whether the liaison is present or not. Mm-hmm. And so if the liaison is there, they would likely be the one that delivers the summary of what's happening. If they're not there, that's why the investigator would be present to help. Because we don't want to age the files unnecessarily because somebody can't attend. Great question. Great comment.
This is Kappas. I move that we accept all the dates on the agenda for the meeting calendar.
Okay. Is there a second?
This is Tim. I second the motion.
Okay.
Rebecca, I second.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Not yet. I'm going to make another motion. Do the dates first.
You want to divide the question?
Yeah, I think so. So I think we're just voting on the dates for now. Actually, go ahead, Dr. Somerhalter, go ahead and call the vote.
Do you want to do a roll call vote?
Fine with me. Okay, a roll call. Go ahead.
Somerhalter?
Yes.
Caputo?
Yes.
Cross?
Yes.
Odell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Alamchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Levine?
Yes.
Motihari?
Well, no, but yes. You know, honestly, with me, I just wanted to make sure if I'm not there, you don't see it as being, not cooperative. It's just the date doesn't work. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. So I'm fine. Yes.
Thank you. We'll miss you, though.
All right.
Thank you.
Motion carries.
And this is Kappas, and I'd like to make another motion to start the meetings at 1 p.m.
Have a second?
Dodell, second.
Motion's been seconded. Any discussion? Again, roll call.
Somerhalder?
Yes.
Caputo?
Yes.
Cross?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami? Palamchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Levine?
Quick question. I'm sorry. So this is yes to the 1 p.m. time frame? No.
No. Correct.
Oh.
It's yes or no.
Okay, no.
And Motihari?
Yes.
No.
So the motion passes, Dr. Levine. So we will start the meetings at 1, but if you can't attend at 1 and you can attend it whatever time you can come, that would be anytime we have an issue, please attend what you can.
Sure.
So,
sure.
Yeah, or not an issue, a meeting, excuse me.
So, Mother Harry, I have a question. So in case if you can attend a meeting partially, would you have to announce you're leaving? Is that how it's going to go?
Yeah, it's easiest if you announce when you come and when you leave.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
And I might add, When you jump into a meeting, especially virtually, you might jump into, not might, you'll likely jump right into a conversation that's happening. You may not want to jump right in and say, hi, this is Dr. Motihari, I'm here. You may just want to note the time, like right now, it's, at least on my computer, it says 4:12. Just note the time, and then when there's a convenient break, just say, hi, this is Dr. Motihari, I just want to let you, the committee, be aware that I joined the meeting at 4:12.
Sounds good. Thank you.
You're welcome. I think adjournment's
going to happen. I think we're, yep. Meeting adjourned. Thank you for it.
You can just say me.